AC needs to run. So Mazur Stoneman says they can help make it more affordable for people to protect themselves from the heat. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale
What's happening, Catskill? You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. This is Chuck Ansbacher, Broody Duck, signing off.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a three-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many three-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-212-7509 as they want, and WGXE will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number again to call in and record a three-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509.
WGXE underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Peter McPartland of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
90.7 FM.
Acra, Hudson, Catskill.
Good evening, and thank you for joining this evening. I am Kimberly Y. Irwin, your host of Race Talks on WGXC 90.7 FM, a waveform.org enterprise. Can I speak tonight? Here every third Tuesday of the month from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. is where we have the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. And I get asked, why talk about race? My answer is simply to combat racism. Education is key and discussion a must. And it is my hope that you too will come to know that there's only one race, the human one, and many ethnicities. In fact, as I say that, I'm thinking about one of my special guest speakers today, who still uses the term race, and she's quite young, and we'll be talking about young people. But I'm going to finish my intro with saying what we're going to do today is clearly we're going to keep it real here on Race Talks. This is where
no topic is a taboo.
Exactly. And that is from my guest talker, Magdalene Uzoichi. Now, I'm going to introduce Magdalene a little bit later in the show, but not so far later because we are jam-packed today. I've got two speakers. I have a great poem by County Cullen. He's one of my favorite poems from Harlem during the Harlem Renaissance. And his poem, I always stated it incorrectly. I attended an HBCU, Spelman College, and when we read about African-American artists and arts, traditional arts like art history, and when they're working with their hands, or whether it's poems or music, I always get a vision of what they might have been back in the day, because back in the day, like in the Harlem Renaissance, we have a different place in America as being African American. So in that space, these people were making such beautiful music, incredible poetry, and creating many beautiful things with their hands. And I'm always in awe of that time period when they're able to do that and still not be considered a first-class citizen in America. So I definitely want to talk about that. What does it mean to be African American in America? And that is our talk term. But again, before I get started and get into a really great conversation with my guest speaker today, or I should say guest talker, I want to make sure to mention the Children's Book Festival here in this area where 90.7 FM, we have WGXC on the radio. We want to, you know, share what's going on in our community as it relates, in my case, to race and ethnicity. So we're having the Hudson Children's Book Festival, which was established in Hudson in 2009, and it's held each year here in the city of Hudson. However, it wasn't held for the last 2 years because, of course, you know, COVID, the C word. But it still strives to create and sustain and nurture a culture of literacy in partnership with community and schools. And this is a free event, so I want to share with everyone the opportunity, if you love reading the way I do, and you love poetry like County Cohen, you should definitely try to participate and bring your children, because there's going to be activities, there's going to be other events like face painting, there's going to be people who are going to be on stage and showcase their talent, and of course, books, and more books, and with books comes authors. And I'm an author, and normally I don't plug myself, but today I will, because I will be at the Hudson Children's Book Festival. My book came out the very year COVID started, and we had no idea that we weren't going to be able to, in May, hold the Children's Book Festival. So my book, There's Only One Race, The Human One Says Me, A Children's Book Ending Racism, has in it a host of young people who are directly from this area. Many students are going to Hudson City School District, and they're actually shown in my book to have connections with people of all different ethnicities in and around their school. So I just really thought it would be great for those young people to be part of this festival with me. So they will be there too, and you can come and definitely have a great time and meet people who helped me author my children's book. So again, I mentioned the fact that one of the reasons for me writing the book is because I wanted to have people I wanted to have people find a way of ending racism in their own sphere of the world, and in their own space, because you can't end racism in general, but you certainly cannot, certainly can have an opportunity to not have it affect you in such a negative way. And that's one reason for the show, Race Talk, so people can see how we can have real easy conversations about topics that aren't taboo for us, but maybe taboo in your neck of the woods. So I'm first going to, like I said, I want to get really straight to my guest because she's fabulous. I'm going to just read a little bit about her. I just want to make sure that Miss Magdalene Uzoichi is still on.
I'm here.
Okay, great. Because I don't want to introduce you and then ask you a question. Of course, we're on Zoom to be able to talk to one another, so I just didn't see her beautiful face with great braids today. But before I say all that about you, let me just, you know, say the bare minimum and let you explain who you are and why you're taking part on Race Talks today. Magdalene Uzoichi, who has a master's degree, an MBA, a Master of Arts degree, and a Master of Business, I think that's administration. She can share that if I'm correct or not on that. She is a Nigerian entrepreneur. So she comes from Africa in Nigeria. And from there, she has the passion for empowering African youth through entrepreneurship. That's in fact how we met, because Magdalene, with her dedication, has led her to become affiliated with both the African Women Entrepreneurship Cooperative, AWEC, and its American counterpart, USAWEC, which is where we met. where she serves as a senior program advisor and head program advisor, respectively, for both the institutions. One of the reasons, again, I asked for Magdalene to come on the show was because of her real easy way of talking with people of all different ethnicities, ethnic groups, nations, nationalities, and her travel experience. And, you know, just because she does motivate to help young people. And I think that's a powerful thing to do, is to live your life in support of those who come after us. And that's really important. So I want her to come on right now, Ms. Magdalene Uzoichi, and share with us one of the things that you find that really makes you feel, well, I should say, lights your fire when, you know, you work with youth. What was one of your aims to do so?
Thank you, Kim, and good evening, everyone. I thank you for having me on this show. My name, as you heard earlier, is Magdalene Uzoichi. I'm excited to be here today to discuss the important topic of race and our youth, and to share my perspective as an Igbo person living in Lagos, Nigeria. The thing that really fires me up is that when it comes to the issue of race, ethnicity, tribalism, some people, when they have issues with it, it makes them, it dents their life throughout their lifetime. So I like the idea that we're talking about it today, maybe to bring succor to people that have somehow been battered, or some people that have had bad experience when it comes to ethnicity, racism, and then show them the pathway. Thank you again, Kim, for having me here.
Thank you again for being here. And like I said, just listening to you state what you stated, you have a profound experience being from Africa that many of us in America really, who didn't have the opportunity to travel as much, and certainly not have the opportunity to even visit a country in Africa. So you bring that perspective. So I would like to ask you again, what specific things that you do in Nigeria, maybe, or some other African countries? Because you said right now you're not actually in Nigeria, are you?
All right, I'm not in Nigeria. I'm in Kenya, Nairobi, Kenya. I came for the General Assembly of AWEC, like you hinted. We just rounded up our fifth cohort, and we had a live event at Nairobi, Kenya. That is why I'm here.
So when you say your fifth cohort, that is of helping entrepreneurs, female entrepreneurs, women?
Yes, women entrepreneurs across Africa.
Now, are any of them young people that you inspire or help start their businesses?
That is my work. My passion in life is entrepreneurship, and it fires me up to see people do their businesses. And it is something motivating and encouraging people, and helping them to set up their structures is something I can do even when I'm woken up from sleep. I didn't want to continue talking about this AWC or women entrepreneurship. I wanted to really dive into my newest project, which is called Handworker.
Please do so.
All right. Professionally, I have extensive experience in for-profit, non-profit, startup, business development, and project management. But in alignment with the topic we are discussing tonight, let me dwell a little bit more on Handworker. Concerned about the level of unemployment in Africa, and more especially in Nigeria, I and two other co-founders are working on an edtech project that we call Handworker. This product focuses on vocational and technical skill education. We are looking at using our platform to disrupt the vocational and technical skill industry in Africa by not only making it attractive to youth, but also by advocating for and possibly ensuring the adherence to high ethical standards and pride of work for players in the industry. We see the platform as a product that contributes to driving down the high rates of youth unemployment in Africa, which currently stands at about 50% in Nigeria. So my focus for now, aside my women entrepreneurship job, is trying to create a career pathway for African youths, especially Nigerian youths, who are finding it so difficult to get employed or being profitably employed. We are creating a pathway that will help them learn vocational and technical skills and practice it ethically and profitably. Thank you.
Thank you. So when you say you work with youth in Africa for reasons of to try to get them employed, and 50% unemployment is a huge number. We speak in America about our young people, and certainly our young people of color, not having the same opportunities as those who have lighter skin or are from the European heritage. So when we look at disparities here with you know, looking at the rate of unemployment with our youth, or the inability for them to be the best they can be, we look at it through a racial lens. I always wondered, and I'm sure my listeners are also wondering, is that the same case in Africa? There are some countries, and I know you're specifically talking about Nigeria, but I do know that you are a world traveler and certainly travel throughout Africa, as you just said, you're in Nairobi. So what would you say, and since you've been in the US too, what would you say that the reasons for the inability of the youth in Africa to find work? I'm thinking you're talking about those with darker skin, because there are some Africans who, of course, aren't black, what we would consider black.
All right. I think I should start by acknowledging that race is a complex and sensitive topic that can elicit a range of emotions and opinions. However, I believe that having an open and honest conversation like I want us to have here today about these issues is essential for building understanding and promoting positive change. In Africa, we don't really talk about racism. We talk about ethnicity and tribalism. And when you think about it, you see that there are some dominant tribes, there are dominant ethnic groups that tend to dominate others and make it too difficult for people from the races that feel marginalized, or the smaller tribes, from really attaining their goals or having access to government employment. And when you talk about Africa, you know that there is limited opportunity in the private sector. And then the public sector is mainly populated by people that have the connections. That is what we call it in Africa, the connections. People who have people already in the space who will link them up. So when you see, when we talk about unemployment, when you come down to southern Nigeria, you see that people are highly educated, but they find it difficult to eke out a living because of non-availability of jobs. And then when you go up north, you discover that people who are quite less qualified than the people down south are occupying high positions because of where they, because of the ethnic or tribal group they belong to. So that's why I say when you talk about race in the US, it is different from what we experience in Nigeria. And I believe the same goes to other parts of Africa.
I like that you specified the, you know, you used the term tribalism. Because of our, and when I say our American history with Native American populations, the term tribe has become made negative a term, terminology. So using the term tribalism in the very way of its meaning is refreshing, because it does show that it's a regional grouping of people, not, you know, because of any one way. It's just a term to really show that people are grouped together in certain orders. And in this case, it can be an ethnic order, as you stated, or it can be, you know, in some ways it can be because of a certain team. But from what we're talking about here, it's because of a certain camaraderie, and it's not about your color or about in Africa about your color, because if you're all the same color, we're going to look see each other differently in different ways. So it may not be through racism, the racial lens, but through the ethnic differential, and that comes because of some of the things that you mentioned. Just where you're from or your economic background. How would that be resolved in a country like Nigeria, where there is many people who are highly qualified, highly educated? I know of a few Nigerians who came to the United States who were exactly that, highly educated doctors with doctorate degrees. So that's another misconception about Africa, I believe, and certain nations in Africa, that many of its people are not as educated or available to or have education available due to the costs associated with educating the populations in the nations in Africa.
I think it might interest our audience to know that Nigeria has like over 350 ethnic groups.
Whoa.
And we have over 500 languages.
Okay, I didn't know
so
that.
Wow. We don't see ethnicity as a negative thing. It's just the group you belong to or you were born into. That is what it is. So,
now, when you say languages, is that something that you learn in school, you write, or is it really, because I know there's one national language, correct?
Yes, we have a national language. That's the lingua franca, English.
Okay.
And that is the language you can use to communicate across the country. But every nook and cranny, like there's a music that says every meter you have a language. Every clan has a language. But there are three dominant languages in Nigeria. You have the Hausa, you have the Yoruba, and you have the Igbo. They are the three dominant languages in Africa, in Nigeria.
And that's what I've learned when I was at Spelman, those three major languages. So I also thought that some of those languages went across nations, like some people on the Western coast of Africa also spoke some of those languages. Would that be the case?
Yes.
Okay. And so would
like you
consider
see,
yourself...
Hausa is spoken maybe in Niger Republic. It is spoken in Chad and what have you. You have Yoruba is spoken in Benin Republic, Republic of Benin, and some parts of Togo.
So in this case, then, would an ethnic group also be divvied up in the sense that it's not just ethnicity within a nation, but your ethnicity within different nations because of, you know, nations being carved up? it was initially that of this European background, right, that came to Africa and started making nations with groups that were maybe not specifically of those areas. So
exactly.
Okay.
Exactly, because when you talk about the ethnic nationalities in Nigeria, you see that we are just together because of that name Nigeria that the colonial masters put all together. But when you dive into the nation, you see that we have a lot of dissimilarities that normally we are not even supposed to be in the same country because we are so, so different across mm-hmm. board. And then you discover that, like I said, that outside spoken, maybe in Niger and in Chad, you find out that people in northern Nigeria have more affinity with people from this across that country than they have with people from the southern part of the country. Because those are their brothers in the real sense of it. But because of colonialism and demarcation of Africa, people were just bundled together. Tribes were separated because actually I believe those colonial masters didn't really know who is who.
Mm. That is something. In fact, what you just said inspired me in my head. I'm thinking of my special guest talker because though she's not currently here on air, she did answer a few questions when we spoke, and I asked her if I could share that with the listeners. And that would really be helpful here as we take a pause so we can introduce the segment with the topic African-American, because really, what does it mean to say African-American? Is that a demarcation in a sense due to colonialization and in a sense that Africans from the continent were taken and brought to the United States or to this new world, so to speak, as it were, in the past, and then made to try to become a tribe in of themselves when they spoke different languages and came from different places and had to try to figure out a way to be a community and to help one another out, and then lost their actual heritage. And that's another reason for me speaking to you and, or I should say, because I'm speaking to you, wanting to offer the audience, the listeners, the poem Heritage, because it has some kind of special recognition of just that plight. So I would like to first, if you don't leave, please, Magdalene, because I want to hear your thoughts on, you know, maybe something that my next guest says, because she's a young person, and I want to know from your working with young people, maybe they might feel something similar, even though it's not racial, like, again, not a racial lens, but maybe of a sort of ethnic lens, like you were talking about. So right now, I want to take the opportunity to introduce, or I should probably have her introduce herself, because she does mention who she is, but this is a young person that I've met recently who agreed to share a little bit about who she is and what she thinks about the term being African-American. So here we have her introduce herself.
Hello, my name is Joey White, a recent graduate from Central State University. Well, not so recent, I guess. May of 22, I graduated with my bachelor's degree and major in mass communication, broadcast media. And my background ethnicity is African-American, Bahamian American. I identify as both. I identify as African-American, Bahamian, and I'm also other races because my dad and mom is also mixed with other races. So I'm really just a melting pot of a lot of things, but majority Bahamian and African-American. So
she says she's mainly that. So being that was one of the things that made me feel akin to wanting her on her speak about this on the show, because she identified as Bahamian American. And I recall one of my friends in grad school asking me, why do we call ourselves African American, meaning Black people or a person with a darker skin tone whose heritage is traditionally from Africa, the continent, who, like I mentioned, came from populations that were enslaved here in the United States. And I said, because we didn't want to not be known as having a heritage. You know, I have friends who are from Poland, and they, or their parents were, and so they consider themselves a Polish American, and they attend Polish American retreats. And there's communities in major cities like New York where you go to a place and you feel like you're really in somebody's country because there's all the language. And like if you go to Chinatown in New York City, or even in, I have a friend who came from Russia, and she didn't speak very good English, but she said she felt right at home when she was in certain parts of Brooklyn and New York because of their speaking Russian, and their stores had Russian, the Russian alphabet there. So she was able to read things. So I thought that was really interesting that she made mention of her not being just an African-American, but then she really stated a Bahamian-American at the same time and what that meant for her. And so would you say in either in Nigeria or other countries in Africa, where young people specifically identify themselves, not like you mentioned, not as the whole nation of Nigeria, but as their own small places within the larger nation? And what might some of those be?
I think the idea of one cleaving or aligning with where one comes from goes across all races and all tribes. Like in Nigeria, like I told you that we have like 350 tribes. People will want to identify with their people because that is their heritage. So you, when you come to Nigeria, I will not just say I'm a Nigerian. I said I'm a Nigerian. If you look, if you listen clearly, you heard that I said I'm an Igbo living in Lagos, Nigeria. So Nigerians will all over Africa will want to identify with their people because that is their identity. You cannot just be thrown into the whole fray of the country without an identity as if you are nowhere. And like she said, in Nigeria, we are a matrilineal country. You have people from different tribes coming together in matrimony. But what happens most often is that it is the man's name and tribe that the children takes after. So they will always say that, like if I'm Igbo and I'm married to a Yoruba as a man and we have children, my children will claim that they are Yoruba.
Oh.
But that is their father's tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's like that, although I've heard that there are some parts of Africa that are matrilineal. But in Nigeria, we are patrilineal.
Well, I think that's interesting because our first African-American president, Barack Obama, he mentions that, you know, when he, in one of his books, that he goes back to Africa and sees that he finds himself feeling more understanding of his cultural heritage in Africa after being there because of what they say to him about his father. And so that helped build that bridge for him, though he wasn't around his father that much. With that, I'm going to play the next segment for our student who explains more in depth about her situation, seeing herself as an ethnic identity that is different than many people or others, some others in the U.S.
What it means to me to be Bahamian American? Well, it actually means a lot, but to kind of sum it up in one word, it really just means to be strong and to never break and to stand on who I am. Because a lot of times it's going to be questioned and is going to be up for debate, but you as a person and me as a Bahamian, I feel like I just have it in me to just kind of shut it all down. Like, no, my identity and who I am and what I stand on and my morals and everything that I do is not up for debate. So that's what it means to me.
And I really like how she mentioned it's not up for debate. I am who I am, right? You mentioned when you are looking to help youth, you know, get jobs and maybe start their own businesses, that they are maybe not giving the same advantages of others because of their tribal reach. So I don't know if identifying those different tribes would help here, but what are some of the reasons, or I guess how do you go about helping those young people? And are they from Igbo? Are they from your tribe? Or what's the groups of students or young people that you work with and help?
I will say that I'm among the tribalized Nigerians who don't deal with people based on their ethnic or tribal foundation. So I deal with people as individuals and as human beings, not because of where they come from. One thing I don't understand is that some people who do not even know you, do not know anything about you, will want you to align with them because you are from the same tribe. I will tell you a story. While I was in my latter part of my secondary school, I had to finish up in my village. And that is a place I have not really lived. I do not know anybody. So when I came to that school, I made friends with somebody that was just entering the school like me. But there are people in that school, other students, who feel that they are from my clan. Remember, I do not know them. Right. They feel they are from my clan, that I should be aligning, I should be associating with them, not with people that are from outside the clan. And I found that very outrageous. You don't know me, I don't know you, and you want to force me to make friends with you. And one good thing about it is that I was brought up to think independently, and that has really helped me throughout my stay. And you see that at every stage you go to, you see people that think like that. I still have somebody do the same thing to me while I was at the university. Ooh. Why are you Igbo not associating with Igbos? You're associating with Yorubas, you're associating with Hausas, forgetting that we are independent thinkers and we relate with people who our mind and our thoughts agree with, or whose lifestyle agrees with our own lifestyle. I cannot just come up and start associating with you just because you are from my clan or you are from my village. It doesn't work that way for me. So I don't care where you come from. The startup I'm building now with my co-founders, we have 7 interns working with us. And out of that 7, only 1 is Igbo. The rest are from different parts of the country.
Wow. I love the way you brought it home that with your story that, you know, I love the way you say you were forced. They were trying to force you to be their friends, because I think that's the same. Obviously, humanity is, we're the same wherever we are, wherever we go. We're not, you know, there's no reinvention of the wheel. It's just whatever you have with a large group of people, you're going to get every kind of person in that group. And we had a conversation about it once in my when I was growing up in this area of Hudson Valley. And the idea was just, you know, when a person walked into a class, into the cafeteria, you were thought to know where you were going to be seated because of what you looked like. So if you're a young Black girl, you certainly couldn't sit with any young white girl, or, you know, certainly not with any boys, whether, you know, you had to conform. And that word conformity, I think, is one of the biggest evils. When you conform, you don't grow. I'm going to play another segments with my special guest talker, Joey White, because she mentioned something similar to what you are stating. Isn't it just interesting how, you know, we have a conversation, and though we're not conversing together, she has very similar experiences.
I am very comfortable with different ethnicities and being around different ethnicities, because I have always grew up around different ethnicities, from being at school, from growing up in the neighborhood and playing outside, different activities, different outside out of school activities. I have always been, even in college, I have always been around different races, different backgrounds, and just different people. So for me, I kind of thrive off of it, especially wanting to be a movie producer and TV producer and director. It's kind of what I thrive off of, seeing different opinions and seeing different backgrounds and hearing it and really getting in and like in, I can't even think of the words, but really just getting involved in these people's lives and seeing how people are raised and grew up and seeing how different backgrounds and upbringings really affects people's lives, everyday lives at that. Bonus question. Have you ever traveled to the Bahamas?
Okay, she says that because I asked her, I'm going to give you one more. I told her only three questions, but I was like, I'm going to give you a bonus question. And this particular question really is another example of what we were just speaking of.
No, I haven't traveled to the Bahamas, but at my school, at Central State University, we have a large population of Bahamians, and especially a large population of people from Nassau, Bahamas. And my mom is from Nassau, Bahamas. So it's a big population. And I had to defend myself since from day one, from freshman year, having people question me like, because I would feel the same. People are like Bahamian saying like, don't claim that you're Bahamian, not Bahamian. I'm just like, oh no, I'm very much half Bahamian. It got to kind of like a point where my mom came up here, came up to my college and was just kind of moving me out. And she heard some Bahamians talking, and my mom started, you know, talking to them, and they was like surprised. And then when my mom told them that I was her daughter, they was just kind of surprised and shocked, because they have been like kind of not harassing me, but kind of like, no, you're not, da da da, for forever. And so for my mom to finally like step on campus and do that, like everybody was kind of like, okay, she wasn't lying. So yeah, so that was my experience with it.
So yeah, for the listeners, I want to make sure people understand that when she says she's Bahamian or Bahamian American, she's talking about coming from the Bahamas. I know someone was like, where is she from? So in the Bahamas is in the Caribbean, and small island, the Caribbean, where, and what she said, which I didn't know, is that she was talking about one of the schools that she graduated from recently. It's an HBCU, a historically Black college and university, and that many people are from the Bahamas who go there. And I was like, wow, I didn't know that. I didn't think of students coming from the Bahamas to go to school here. But obviously people come from all over to come to school in the U.S. And the fact that she had to prove that she was Bahamian in some way by having her mom speak to the people was kind of interesting, where sometimes we don't look the way we're supposed to look due to our heritage. Has that been any, has that had any influence in Nigeria or with any of the youth you work with having to find a way to overcome or a way to speak to that? Because like, I know when in the book that I wrote, there's only one race, the human one, says me, a children's book, Ending Racism. One way of ending racism is acceptance of yourself. You know, obviously knowing history, having that kind of knowledge so you can feel armed and assured that what you say is correct. And also having a really good, comfortable knowledge and feeling about who you are and your identity, where you don't have to be, or where you're not second guessed or have to deal with that. So is that something that would hinder someone from getting a job in Nigeria, not feeling comfortable about who they are, their identity?
You know, when you talk about racism in the U.S., you talk about some kinds of deprivation, you talk about some kind of discriminations. The same thing is happening in Africa. At least I can comfortably talk about Nigeria. You see, people are discriminated against because of their tribe. People are stereotyped because of their tribe. People are not able to align or get into some social class because of their tribe. I can tell you that no, there's no point going far. I can use myself as example. When I wrote a university entrance examination, I had wanted to study law. And I got a high grade, but I was not admitted into the school I applied for. The reason was that I come from an educationally advantaged state. And you will wonder, why do you say that I come from an educationally advantaged state? Because I'm from the southern part of Nigeria, or because I'm from Imo State? And you forget that you cannot profile people because of the state their parents come from. These people might not have even gone to that state before. They might not have even lived in that state before. And you start your kindergarten or nursery school with somebody that they claim is from an educationally disadvantaged state. This person, you did your nursery school together, you did your primary school together, you did your secondary school together, taught by the same teachers. And when it comes to certain things, they'll say that you are more advantaged than the person. Mm. And that is when they bring in the quota system. And this quota system has been a clog in the wheel of Nigeria's progress. You see people that are highly qualified, they are not given opportunity. And like I had, I think 300, I scored like 300 points in that examination, and I was not given admission. And there will be, I saw somebody later, because I went back to read English in that school. I saw somebody that scored 150 points, and she was admitted into that class.
Mm.
And we end up doing, you know, English and law, you do some electives together. Yeah, and you see the people underperforming, and you'll be wondering, you know, what that did to me at the early stage of my life was that it made me feel, you know, this anger against the system. Mm. It took me some time to come off it. And that is why you see some people from my tribe, they had to struggle hard to make sure that they excel, because we don't depend on the government, because we know that nothing good comes our way from the government. So we need to, we struggle. You see a lot of people, that is why you see some people, they come to the US and they stay. Mm-hmm. They excel so much. And you look back, but you were in Africa, you were in Nigeria, you were not doing well, because the person was not given a platform. The person was not given a level playing ground to exhibit what God has put inside the person. So this act of deprivation, this act of discrimination happens every day in Nigeria. And it's something we have, we are learning to live with. But what I tell people is that I know that this idea of discrimination, stereotyping people, and trying to create divisions are being set up by people that are earning or benefiting from it. So they wouldn't want people to come together. They want that division because that is where they profit from. Our colonial masters have brought us together and we've been living together for long. I know some people from my ethnic group might not agree with me, but I feel that since we are here together, we have to look for a way to live together in peace.
Yes.
Where there should be equity.
Yes.
Where there should be opportunity for all.
Well, what you're saying is very similar to when you're talking about quotas, very similar to what I would say the state, meaning the American government as the state, has been wrestling with. I know as I was growing up, the admittance and the one of the reasons why I thought it was really wonderful to have a student here from an HBCU, historical black college and university, is one because I went to one and I like to meet people who come from other ones. So that could be like our tribe in a sense. And our tribe was necessitated because people with darker skin couldn't attend regular, you know, schools. They couldn't attend Harvard's and Princeton's and Yale, or they couldn't attend a central state university, you know, of a state university in a state. So, I mean, in fact, you know, the time was just, I want to say, I'm not going to be good on math, but I went about 70 years ago or so where the first Black students were able to be admitted into many city or state schools. So this idea that you just shared was a definite in our country back in the day, but even somewhat recently as in like the 70s or the 80s, where students weren't seeing themselves, weren't applying to schools because they already thought that they wouldn't be admitted because of their tribal difference, their ethnic difference, their color of their skin. And so a quota system was developed and fought by the majority. So I look to see how our young people are now, you know, getting the type of education that their grandparents and parents, well, I should say their grandparents only, you know, really hope that they would be able to, that they had to fight the system. And what I was hearing from you is kind of like that's not the case in Nigeria so much, or maybe in some other African countries where you can literally fight your government because your government is made up of people who are like you. And I think that's what's happening now in America, because we are having, you know, we only had one president who wasn't a white male. So we're not there yet, but we're starting to be in power. We are starting to hold positions in many state governments, many of the major states, in fact, where we are holding many the power. So if we don't come correct for our people, which in a sense is coming correct for all people, then it's not going to happen. So I really understand, and I'm so glad you expressed that story. I have a question for you, and it's a question that I'd like for you to, you know, if you don't want to answer, that's fine, because I don't like gotcha questions, but you're so open. So I want to know what your thoughts are about Americans like me considering ourselves African American. I mean, certainly some of us possibly could say that they're Nigerian American if they could claim heritage from, you know, Nigeria. Many of them claim West Ghana or something like that because they can identify their great, 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 great forefathers from those places in Africa. But I wanted to know, what are your thoughts as just being an African woman living in an African nation, Nigeria? When you come to America, how do you see yourself? I know, I'm thinking you don't want to be considered a title or a term at all, but what might that be? Or you can answer that question however you want to. We don't have that much time, but I do want to play one part of Heritage, the poem by County Cullen, that I think really represents why I'm asking you that question. The fact that African Americans feel some kind of home still from a nation that many of us will never see or never be a part of. This is called Heritage by County Cullen, and I'm playing a little bit towards the end of it.
Okay. Stone in a likeness like their own. My conversion came high priced. I belong to Jesus Christ, preacher of humility, heathen gods are not to me. Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, so I make an idle boast. Jesus of the twice turned cheek, Lamb of God, although I speak with my mouth thus, in my heart do I play a double part. Ever at thy glowing altar, must my heart grow sick and falter, wishing he I served were black, thinking then it would not lack precedent of pain to guide it. Let who would or might deride it, surely then this flesh would know yours had borne a kindred woe. Lord, I fashion dark gods too, daring even to give you dark despairing features where, crowned with dark rebellious hair, patience wavers just so much as mortal grief compels, while torches quick and hot of anger rise to smitten cheek and weary eyes. Lord, forgive me if my need sometimes shapes a human creed. All day long and all night through, one thing only must I do. Quench my pride and cool my blood, lest I perish in the flood, lest a hidden ember set timber that I thought was wet, burning like the driest facts, melting like the merest wax, lest the grave restore its dead, not yet has my heart or head in the least way realized. They and I are civilized.
So Heritage is about Africa, and my favorite part I didn't play because we don't have time to play it all. I want to hear your answer to the question, but I'll just say a part of it. It says, Africa, a book one thumbs listlessly till slumber comes, and then it starts expressing all of the amazing wondrousness about Africa, the continent, and the care of the people and the landscape and the beauty and the awesomeness of it. And at the end, he says to himself, you know, I'm a black man, but I don't see God as a black God. I don't see myself. Who am I? How do I make this okay? So what are your thoughts, Magdalene? And we have like 2 minutes.
In the university, I read a novel because I studied English and literary studies. And my thesis was in African American literature. We read the novel Roots.
Ah, okay.
And when you think about how people yearn to get this sense of identity, so I don't blame African Americans that are trying to trace their roots, because they feel, and what pushes people to do that is because they are looking for a sense of belonging. They want to feel that this is me, this is where I belong, this is my heritage. I believe that if the Black Americans have been fully integrated into the system in America, they will not be looking for a place they know nothing about. It's because they feel that they are not really part of this. They are being discriminated against. That is why they are looking for maybe that place that my ancestors came from. If I go there, I will have some kind of fulfillment. I'll have some kind of release that this is me, this is my root, this is where I belong. That sense of that is a human, that is human nature. Human always look for ways to belong, way to have fulfillment in and having a sense of belonging. So I don't blame any American that thinks that way, because even in Africa is something.
Magdalene Uzoichi, thank you so much for your words. Thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you so much for being in my life. Hope we meet and talk and chat again.
Of course we will. And thank you for having me in this show. I have learned a lot and I've been able to somehow express myself. Hopefully our listeners must have learned a lot from us or must have picked